WCCF News Radio 1580.
Good morning, Southwest Florida, and welcome to the Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues, brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte, Florida. This is a live medical talk show in which you're invited to participate. If you have a question or comment along the way, feel free to call us at 941-206-1580 or toll free at 888-441-1580. And now, here's your host of the show, Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Good morning, everyone. So good to be here. Such a beautiful, beautiful day. And I tell you, last week, didn't we get a lot of callers? That was great.
I love that. It's exciting.
So much fun. And the other thing is, it's so heartfelt. That lady, Marilyn, who talked about her father and COPD. And you know, today we're going to talk more about COPD and other issues with breathing. And Dr. Katzen's here today. Hi, Dr. Katzen.
Hi, how you doing today?
And you're going to talk about sleep apnea too, right?
Right, right.
And Zane is doing great.
Well, I'm trying to lose weight. I'm doing I call it the Garden Center heavy lifting workout.
Oh, well, but that's especially during the day, middle of the day, right?
Well, at night, actually, yeah.
Oh, at night.
I drive a forklift at a local garden center in Northport. And, so it's not just driving around. You get off and you have a half a pallet of one thing and you have to combine it with another half a pallet or add to a full pallet, or it's really neat. And I actually feel so good when I'm done. But the only trouble with that is, you know, when you work till midnight, you have trouble sleeping because you're up.
Yeah.
The adrenaline's going and
right.
It's
yes.
A lot of fun.
That's true. And you know, the lean and green diet that I've been speaking about, I am really doing great. And all my patients I tell them, you know, I've already lost 10 pounds. I haven't weighed myself this week yet. And I'm so excited because I am feeling really good also. And I'll tell you, I discovered something that's really good. We went to the Saltwater Cafe.
Oh, one of my favorite places of all time.
Oh, my gosh. I had lobster. It was fabulous.
Where's that?
That is in Venice.
Well, a little bit north, Nokomis.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Which in Spanish, do you know what Nokomis means?
No, I don't.
My dad used to always say, oh, you can't eat here. It means don't eat. No comis.
Oh, no.
But anyways, at the Saltwater Cafe, it's so delicious. And they have a kale salad. I love kale. So in our garden at home, a friend is helping me, and he is making a kale garden. And I just love kale. And, you know, it's so good for you.
Yeah, anything, the dark green, leafy, any colorful vegetables are really good for you.
So I'm doing the lean protein and green. And so I had lobster. I had the kale salad, which was, they make it right at your table. Oh, my gosh, it was so delicious. I love good food, and I'm going to tell you, when you get all the fresh ingredients, you put it together. That's why I love having a garden. Everything is so fresh. The only thing is everything blooms at the same time, right?
Right. And the kale that you grow, the texture is much different than what you buy in the store.
It's so funny.
It's so delicious.
It's so funny that kale has become such a go-to nutrient now and such a go-to vegetable. I remember we used to use kale back long, long time ago when I worked in the deli. We used to use it for decoration.
Oh, and garnish, yes.
Back then, they thought that it was just for garnish. We didn't know we could eat it.
It's so delicious.
There's a kale soup out there. Do you know about Portuguese kale soup with the sausage?
Told me that. That's
delicious. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, I like, you know, kale raw. And just make it in a salad. It is so delicious. So, everybody, we have a lot to cover today. One of the things we're going to cover is, remember we talked about COPD last week? We're going to go over that and the treatment. But first, I want to talk about the question I have is, what body part am I? and we seem to be getting a great response from people. I think it's going to be easier this week. Last week was a little bit harder.
Well, somebody called.
We got two people. And they guessed what body part am I? And I'm really glad that people are thinking. By the way, I want everyone to know, I am so excited. I read the book, The Female Secret Hormone, How Testosterone Replacement Can Change Your Life. Well, let me just tell you, the book is great. You can read it. I read it cover to cover. Every woman out there needs to read this book who's over the age, at least the age of 38. I'm telling you, it's a game changer. It's a life changer. Now, when I talk about a book, I've read the book. And I can tell you, the author of the book, where I'm already working to schedule Dr. Maupin on the show with her co-author. Also, we're looking...
She's a very animated person. She's
oh my gosh, she has so much energy. She's really... Dr. Maupin, and she's gorgeous, too. Absolutely gorgeous. So much energy. She's an OBGYN doctor who now specializes in hormone therapy for men and women. It's called BioBalance. So if anybody has a computer out there, you want to Google her, you want to see her picture, she has podcasts. Oh, she's just great. So it's called BioBalance Health, or Dr. Maupin, M-A-U-P-I-N. You know, I am here on a mission. I want to share information with everybody and help them to have a better life. That's the whole idea of being a doctor. I want to help you to be healthier, to have aging be healthier. Don't you think so, Dr. Katzen?
Oh, of course. That's why you're doing the program.
Yes, that's the whole idea. So the book is fabulous. And you can also either buy the book or you can download it on your Kindle. Actually, I have them both. It's really great.
Less than $10.
Less than $10 on the Kindle. So that is, I'm telling you, it's a great investment. So what body part am I? When the doctor opens my mouth, they see hanging down in the middle of the back of my throat. This is who I am. When I get sick, sometimes, or you get sick, sometimes I swell up. So I'll say it again. What body part am I? When the doctor opens my mouth, or your mouth, and sees me hanging down in the middle of the back of your throat. And sometimes when you get sick, I swell up. So what body... Oh, I got a caller. Yay. Hi, caller. What's your first name?
My name's David.
Hi, David. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Okay, you got our answer?
It's your uvula.
Ah, yay! Boy, you're quick on
the trigger, that's for sure.
Yeah. Do you have any questions for us today, David?
No, not today.
Okay, well, thank you for listening.
No problem.
Okay,
bye now. You
take care. Oh, boy, that was quick. That was great. Okay, the uvula. And believe it or not, some people... I've had patients come to me when they got their tonsils out, I guess many, many, many years ago, some doctors would take out the uvula.
Yes. That was so that there would be no obstruction in the airway.
In the airway. So we're going to talk about that too, right, Dr. Katzen?
That's correct.
So going back to COPD, just a recap of last week so everybody knows. It is common, preventable. It's a treatable disease, and we're going to talk about treatments also today. But the main problem with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is that there is a persistent airflow limitation, and there's increased inflammation to the airway, and this is usually secondary to noxious particles. And we spoke about that in smoke, in cigarette smoke, air pollution.
And some places where people live, too.
And the whole problem with COPD is that it breaks down the tissue in your lungs where you can get emphysema. And it causes fibrosis of your small airways, and it decreases your defense mechanisms. That is a lot to chew at one time, isn't it?
Yes, and especially if something else happens, like somebody has a heart attack and gets congestive heart failure, or gets a pneumonia, or has any other acute abnormality. It only makes that acute abnormality a critical thing when people have COPD.
So the hallmark is also symptoms of shortness of breath. And many times people have what we call exacerbations, where they're stable for a while, then they get really sick, really short of breath. So we're going to talk about the treatment. But the bottom line here is that every person has their different levels of severity. And the way to diagnosis, as we talked about before, is to do a very simple test, which is called a spirometry.
That's right.
Where the person will sit there and we check the volume of air that person can blow out after a very deep inspiration. Take a deep breath in, everybody, and then you blow out, blow, 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 and you blow out, and then we measure the total volume that's blown out plus how much volume in the first second.
Yes, because that's the greatest volume actually is in the first second. Remember, it takes only 1 second to inspire, when you're breathing normally, it takes almost 4 seconds to let your air out in a relaxed fashion.
So that's really, really important. There's air trapping. So the bottom line is, so your lungs don't function well. You don't exchange the most important thing. Remember last week we spoke about the alveoli? That's where the gas exchange occurs.
That's right. And if people with COPD have fewer alveoli because the air trapping that goes on and forms bulli and blebs takes up room in the lung so that the number of alveoli is reduced.
So if it's reduced, then you're not as efficient. So it is very important for us to diagnose this problem early on to help prevent the seriousness as it progresses and to help prevent such bad lung function that we call the ultimate could be, unfortunately, respiratory failure.
That's right. And we've all seen people in restaurants who have nasal oxygen wherever they go. And that's because their ability to exchange oxygen and CO2 is so reduced that they need to have oxygen supplementation all the time.
So we know, yes. So because their function, they need, and you need oxygen. Oxygen is energy. You need the oxygen for your body to function.
That's right. Oh.
So what is the first thing we recommend for treatment for patients with COPD? We recommend that patients quit smoking.
That's probably the most important thing, or change their environment if they live in an environment where there are, where there is fumes or noxious elements, or even in a job situation where they might be inhaling some particles.
So we know that if you quit smoking at any time of your life, it's going to make a difference. Wow, I think that's really important to listen to.
Yes.
At any time. You know, we've had some wonderful guests. As everyone knows, I'm a lipidologist. I have my boards in lipids. I'm also a menopause specialist. But if there's things we could do, and we know the cornerstone of everything we do is diet, exercise, and lifestyle. So if we can quit smoking, if I can get one patient to quit smoking, to decrease the damage to the lungs. And remember, smoking also causes inflammation in your arteries.
Right. And also is dangerous for the people who you live with who are not smokers.
So if we could just make a difference. So one of the recommendations It's called the four A's. Well, basically, it's ask, assess the patient to see, are you smoking? Are you still smoking? Advise the patient about how important it is. Assess, you determine, is the patient willing to quit smoking? And we assist. How do we assist? Well, there's medications. There's all kinds of programs to quit smoking, the patches, the lozenges. Now, it is controversial. Some people are using the e-cigarette. And we arrange for follow-up. Arrange that every time the patient comes in, I say, how you doing? Are you cutting back on your cigarettes? Do you want to be around for those grandkids? How about you want to see your kids graduate from high school?
Right. This just brought up a question in my mind that I've wondered about ever since the e-cigarettes came about. Okay, going back to regular cigarettes, we know that the chemicals that are contained in those cigarettes are cancerous, carcinogens. Does nicotine alone, is that a carcinogen? Is nicotine alone a dangerous substance? Because the reason I ask this is because the makers of the vapor, you know, cigarettes and that claim that it's a nicotine delivery system, and some of them are flavored and whatnot. Is nicotine alone a dangerous thing, in your opinion?
Physiologically, it is, because it causes vasoconstriction. But the original anti-smoking lozenges, Nicorettes, was just nicotine that you just that you took orally, because nicotine is very addicting, and that's where the addiction to cigarette smoke is. But the noxious elements in cigarettes is much more than just the nicotine. When people start to break down the various tars, they probably come up with 15 or 20 different noxious elements,
if not more. And it's true, because the thing with the cigarette and is the heat. Also, the heat of the smoke, the particles, the chemicals, all that affects your lungs. And all these toxins, nicotine is, you know, it wasn't meant to be in your body. And we know that more and more people who smoke, as they get older, not only does it affect their lungs, but there's a higher incidence of cancer of the bladder.
Right. And the cancer of the bladder probably doesn't have much to do with the nicotine, but it has to do with all the other noxious elements that are excreted in the urine and irritate the bladder wall, and eventually wind up with some patients developing cancer of the bladder, which is not a very pleasant cancer to have.
So, you know, people would think, oh, it only affects your lungs. No. Cigarette smoking affects your lungs, your heart, your blood vessels, your metabolism, and your bladder. Because all that, you know, the bladder contains your urine. The urine builds up there, and all those chemicals build up in there, irritating your bladder. So that's very important.
Right.
There's also a higher incidence of cancer in people who smoke from all the toxic elements, not just cancer, again, of the bladder, but the lungs and other cancers. So that's a risk. You know, in life, you try to decrease the risk of something bad happening.
Well, also, the smoker is increasing the risk of cancer to the people they live with, because the secondhand smoke is equally dangerous, if not more dangerous, than primary smoke. And there is recent studies that show that the residual toxins that come out of the cigarette, that attach to the wall, attach to the carpet, attach to the furniture in the house, that is an active metabolic chemical, and they evolve into more noxious chemicals than the primary cigarette.
I'm just imagining what that must be doing to the walls of the arteries, too.
Right. Yes. Right. Inflammation. Inflammation is the driver where plaque forms in your arteries. And remember, you don't need a ton of plaque. All you need is one plaque to rupture, as we had discussed, where it ruptures and then forms a blood clot. And then that's what causes the heart attack and stroke. Because when blood doesn't reach your brain, you get a stroke. When blood doesn't reach your heart muscle, when it doesn't reach your heart muscle, you get the muscle dies and needs oxygen.
That's correct. And then in my practice where I used to do angioplasty and whatever, if patients were smokers, whatever good we created was soon done away with by restenosis or reclotting of the vessels.
So if anybody has a question on these topics, don't forget to call us at 206-1580. Or you also, if you're shy, you can email us at askdrtriana@trianapreventioncenter.com. Or if you're looking for a family physician, you can also make an appointment with me at 941-625-1990. So let's go back to treatments of COPD, because we've got a lot to cover today. So we talked about quitting cigarettes. So what are the medications that we can use for COPD? Remember, what's our goals? To decrease symptoms, to decrease exacerbation, and improve your health. You know, part of the Triana Prevention Center, our strategy, our philosophy is we want you to have healthier aging. We want to keep you going and enjoy life.
Right, right, right. And that's the whole idea of some of the hormone balancing that you're into now.
Yes, and the hormone balancing that we do. So what are the medicines that help with COPD? Well, the first ones are called bronchodilators. And what they do is help open the airway, a widening of the airway so that air doesn't get trapped. And they're short-acting and long-acting. I'm not going to go into all the different medicines, but basically they're called beta-2 agonists. Some of you out there may have heard of the name albuterol. You see people with their inhalers or their puffers. Some patients call it puffers. So all these are very important. Now, we open the airway. We also have other inhalers. They're called anticholinergics. They also help open your airway. And we also have, and those are like Tordosa or Spiriva. We have inhaled corticosteroids. Remember, a very important part of COPD is inflammation.
Right.
So inflammation with the corticosteroids, this is going to decrease inflammation in your airway. Now, we have also medications that the inhaler is a combine, a long-acting bronchodilator with a steroid to, number one, open up the airway and decrease the inflammation in your airways. So these are really important. Other treatments include oral steroids. When someone gets an acute exacerbation, they may need an oral steroid to really hit it hard, decrease the inflammation in the lungs. There's also other medicines called phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitors, and these also work to help the airways, and the trade name is Darlicep. What is something that's also very important that a lot of patients forget? Your vaccinations. Get vaccinated for both the flu vaccine. Get your vaccination for your pneumonia vaccination. Keep on top of that. That's really important. If you can help prevent getting sick, then you can help prevent an exacerbation of your COPD.
Are you recommending any kind of medicine to help create a more liquid environment for the mucus that's produced in people with COPD?
Well, you know, they have research on that, and that's, again, some people, it feels that gives them symptom relief, what's called a mucolytic. One of the most common is guaifenesin. Guaifenesin is in, like, Robitussin or also Mucinex, and many people feel better. There's no hard and fast on the research on whether it makes it better or worse. Also,
Isn't it important also for people to drink a lot of water?
It's important for people also to drink fluids, to stay hydrated. Yes, that's important. And if the mucus changes in color, yellow, green, of course you need to be assessed by your physician, and you may need antibiotics. There's a lot of controversy out there about, there was a research about, should patients with COPD be on antibiotics every day to help prevent infections? Again, that's controversial.
Well, also, you know, if you run antibiotics all the time, the bacteria become resistant to that drug.
Right. Well, there was a study where they use azithromycin, which is the medication in the Z-Pak, and they took it every day. And again, as I said, the research is, the study is controversial, whether the risk, the benefit, does it help or not help? Again, the judgment isn't totally out on that, but I want people to be aware that that does exist. And the important thing, again, the number one thing is to quit smoking.
Right.
And to try to prevent exacerbations. Because remember, every time you get an exacerbation, it's like you make the wear and tear on your lungs a little worse. And then as that gets worse, the wear and tear on your lungs, the scar tissue, the inflammation, all that's going to add up so that your lung function will deteriorate. And that's why it's so important on anyone who smokes or anyone who's been diagnosed with asthma or COPD, you need to be checked at least once a year on your lung function. You need to have a spirometry. And I tell patients, it's like, you know, when a patient comes in, what do? We do your vital signs. We check your blood pressure. We check your temperature. We check your pulse. And we check your weight. I know a lot of people don't want to get on that scale, but every single visit, we want to make sure that we check those very important numbers.
Are there some exercises that patients can do to improve the respiration?
Yes, there is. And some patients, one of the things that they can do is there is pulmonary rehab that will show patients how the best way to breathe, to take deep breaths, to use their other muscles in their chest to breathe, to not have little shallow breaths. We want to expand the lungs. So we've talked about treatment. Let's take our little break, and then we're going to talk about sleep apnea.
You're listening to The Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues, brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte, Florida. We encourage you to visit their new website, which is TrianaPreventionCenter.com. That's TRIANA PreventionCenter.com. If you'd like to catch up on previous shows, there's an archive going back to the beginning of the show covering a wide variety of topics. Dr. Triana is accepting new patients currently, and we'll ask the doctor to give her phone number out in just a little bit. And in the meantime, if you'd like to call this program, our numbers are 888-441-1580 or 206-1580. So that's 206-1580 or toll free at 888-441-1580. And now back to Dr. Elizabeth Triana and Dr. Katzen.
Thank you, Zane. And thank you, everyone, for being there, listening to our show. And yes, you can call in. And if you want to make an appointment, our office number is 941-625-1990. I did get a patient who asked last week about if I was taking new patients. I said yes, and they asked, and I'm not going to mention any names, they asked if I will help them. They had to fill out a wellness certificate for their insurance, and I said yes, we do that for patients, and they were looking for a family doctor. So they emailed me on AskDrTriana@TrianaPreventionCenter.com. Also, I had a patient ask about hormones. Now, as you know, we are working harder and harder to help our patients to, how do I say, it's not age gracefully. Some people call it anti-aging medicine. I call it let's be healthier and happier medicine.
And more vital.
And more vital. You know, it's so important. We see how many people here who are in their 80s, they're playing tennis, they're doing great. Well, I want to help patients to get to that level in life, to achieve that. Because, you know, I have some patients who come in, even in their 40s, who come in and they are, they're tired, they're fatigued, they're not interested in a sex life. The women may have gone through menopause, they have vaginal dryness, the men aren't interested, they lost their motivation. Well, we can help you with that.
Right. Well, what Dr. Maupin, to use her terminology of biobalance, I think is a very good term, because what she's trying to do is balance your hormones to somewhere around the age of 40 or slightly under 40.
Right. And she also sees men too. So we're going to talk about that, because balancing your hormones is very, very important. These are the messengers in your body that control, they affect your glands. And it's so important. The hormone that comes from your pituitary gland, the gland that you, your glands and the hormones that they produce, how they affect your cells, your metabolism. You have receptors in your whole body. That's very important.
Oh, yes. And it also will help people lose weight.
Yes, it really makes a difference. So one of the lung issues that we have find, which is more and more, is sleep apnea. Dr. Katzen, tell us, what is sleep apnea?
Well, sleep apnea is an interruption in breathing while you sleep. Now, sleep apnea is a gradation of signs. The most common beginning sign of sleep apnea is snoring, especially very loud snoring.
I got it. I'm telling you right now.
Well, the thing is, we know people, if people used to sleep together and they're not sleeping together anymore, sleeping in separate bedrooms, then chances are one of them has sleep apnea or both.
Well, they make earplugs.
Well, but the problem is sleep apnea can be very dangerous, especially if you have other metabolic problems, like if you have an arrhythmia. It can be because during that time when you're not breathing, you're not exchanging air and not getting any oxygen either.
And it forces your heart to work harder.
Right. Now, about 70% of the people who have sleep apnea that needs some attention are obese. So the most important thing for most people with sleep apnea is to consider a weight loss program.
So that's very important. So if people are overweight, then they're at higher risk to have sleep apnea, and they need to know that they need to see about losing weight.
Right. Now, there's really two kinds of sleep apnea. One of them is what we call obstructive sleep apnea, the thing that causes snoring. And in young people, they can get obstructive sleep apnea because their tonsils and adenoids get so big they can't breathe. And the other is what we call central sleep apnea, and that's a neurologic problem from inside the brain that the brain doesn't sense the stimulus to breathe.
So what conditions cause that? Like brain tumors?
Well, no, it could just be degenerative disease as people get older.
Stroke?
Stroke, or just probably some kind of white matter degeneration. They can wind up having a situation where they don't get the stimulus to breathe. So what happens then? The treatment, of course, is different for obstructive sleep apnea than it is for the neurologic type, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But the obstructive sleep apnea, especially in kids and who may be highly allergic or have large adenoids and tonsils, it's pretty obvious. You take out the tonsils or you use decongestants, just simple decongestants, can open their airway and they won't have the sleep apnea. In adults, there are a variety of different treatments. For minor sleep apnea, there's a mouthpiece that people can use. There is a surgeon in Switzerland that has a little has a surgical procedure that he does through the mouth to sort of change the angulation of the mandible, and he's found that that helps people with their sleep apnea. Decongestions are important too for people who are older who might have allergies as well.
Well, we don't want people to sleep in separate bedrooms. No. That's not going to help their sex life. And that's
important. I also like, you were talking about decongestants. I like those strips that you put over the nose.
Right. Well, whatever you need to do to open the airway will improve sleep apnea. Now, those people who have COPD and sleep apnea and perhaps some other pulmonary disease, they've had TB in the past, they might have had some kind of destructive lung disease, then there's a mask that they can use which will keep a positive pressure of air going into their respiratory system while they're sleeping, and that's called a PEEP device. And there's a whole different variety of things. Now, those people who have central nervous system causes of sleep apnea, there is like a pacemaker.
Wow.
A pacemaker to help you breathe.
A pacemaker to help you breathe. It looks like a pacemaker, and it rests on the chest, and it stimulates the respiratory muscles. And that is that's a relatively new device, but basically what it is just a pacemaker, so that if you stop breathing, it kicks in.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
So, but that's only for the central nervous system cause of sleep apnea. Now, there are a variety of other obstructive causes of pulmonary distress, and they are asthma.
Yeah, asthma is very prevalent.
Yeah, we have an acute bronchitis, which people have mostly in the wintertime when the flu goes around. There's even a congenital origin called an alpha antitrypsin deficiency, which is a deficiency, which is a congenital thing. People don't have anything to do with it. It's something they're born with, which reduces the resistance to infection and inflammation. So they're more likely to have chronic inflammatory disease, more likely to get COPD, pulmonary fibrosis, and the lot.
So if patients have sleep apnea, or your loved one, you hear that they're breathing, or maybe they stop breathing in the middle of the night, they might stop and then all of a sudden catch their breath.
Oh, yes, yes. And that's how most sleep apnea is discovered, by the mate. Now, if people are having a problem with COPD and the doctor suspects they might have sleep apnea, there are sleep labs all around. There's several sleep labs here in Charlotte County where you can sleep under supervision and electronic monitoring to see, in fact, if you have sleep apnea and how bad it is, and that will dictate what kind of treatment might be prescribed. If you have it really bad, you're going to wind up with one of these PEEP devices.
A CPAP.
Right.
The CPAP.
Right.
I call it the Darth Vader mask.
Yes. People with tuberculosis have destruction in a good portion of the lung, and so they are prone to have sleep apnea too. And people with pleurisy, people who've had a pulmonary embolus, all these things compromise the exchange of oxygen. And if people have sleep apnea, makes the complications of sleep apnea more prevalent and more dangerous. Sleep apnea is not something that we just sort of say, oh, you got sleep apnea, go. We'll do something about it. Because people who have compromised lung functions and have sleep apnea, they can die.
Do patients who report a lack of restful sleep, do they fall under this category? I know that, well, I'll use myself as an example. Sometimes I sleep 6 to 8 hours, you know, like I'm supposed to. Of course, I haven't done that in a long time. I'm lucky to get 4. But let's say a typical 8-hour night, you wake up and you don't feel rested, and you go about your day, and later on in the afternoon, you get that huge energy drain. Is that one of the symptoms of sleep apnea too?
Well, I think the I'm really not sure because I don't see patients with sleep apnea.
Well, one of the things one of the things we need to look at when someone tells me they're not getting a restful sleep is we look for sleep apnea.
Right.
It's very important. And I'm not saying that for you that's causing the problem, but that's one of the things. When patients feel that they don't wake up, they're fatigued. But remember, we talked about, too, not just sleep apnea. Hormone imbalance, a deficiency of testosterone. Also, patients feel like a lack of energy in both men and women. They're fatigued. They don't have the motivation to get up and go. So, you know, when we have a patient, when I see a patient, I do a complete history and physical, get all the information. I look at all their records, their past records. And as I tell my patients, I'm putting all the information together to, first of all, get to know them better and also to take better care of them. So is it sleep apnea or not? We don't know. We don't know until we put it all together, get all the history, and look at the whole patient.
Right. Well, the sleep apnea that we're talking about is obstructive, so there's got to be some reason for the obstruction. But the other entities that we've talked about, like the TB, the pulmonary embolism, the bronchiectasis, somebody has air in the chest, pneumothorax, all those things that compromise further will be compromised further if somebody does have obstructive sleep apnea, and then increase the risk of having a complication like either an arrhythmia or really a death. Because if you don't have a pacemaker and you're sleeping and you have an arrhythmia and you don't wake up to do because you're sleeping, then you can, if you have an arrhythmia like VTAC or VFib, you're going to die.
So that's really important to know, because if you have your, and what is an arrhythmia? Arrhythmia means an abnormal rhythm of your heart. So if you have an abnormal rhythm of your heart, the heart may cease to function correctly. Therefore, what does the heart do? It pumps blood. Well, if it doesn't pump blood and it doesn't get the blood to you, the rest of your body, which means oxygen, then that can lead to death.
Right.
So it's very important if you feel you have sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is associated also with diabetes, people, obesity, people who are overweight. Well, is it the chicken or the egg? Is it the sleep apnea that causes the person to get overweight? Or is it the overweight person that also affects the sleep apnea? Well, I think it's both.
Oh, yes, it is both. And whatever intrinsic disease people might have in their circulatory system, like somebody has coronary artery disease, if they're not getting any oxygen, it increases the sensitivity of the myocardium, and they're more likely to even get an arrhythmia if they're normally, and if they're in, when they're in a normal situation and have normal oxygen exchange, they have a normal heart rate and rhythm. But in an apneic situation where they're not getting any oxygen, then that heart can develop an arrhythmia during that time. And just because they start breathing again doesn't mean that arrhythmia is going to go away.
That's very important. So if you have a loved one that you say, you know, talk to your doctor, bring it up. It's really, really important.
Well, especially if you have a mate and the mate used to be able to sleep with this person, and you can't sleep with them anymore because the snoring is so loud. Well, it's usually very loud snoring that is associated with sleep apnea.
Oh, I have a nickname now. I'm called the Chainsaw.
All right. Well, we'll send you off to the sleep lab.
Yeah, we'll have to send you to the sleep lab to get checked out.
Oh, my.
The chainsaw. That's cute.
But there's all sorts of things, that, you know, there's simple things you can do. You mentioned the little bridge that you can put on your nose that helps some. Using nasal decongestants and make sure that your airway is open before you go to sleep. So even using saline in your nose to make sure that your saline spray, so make sure that your airway is open. Because that's, remember, sleep apnea is obstructive or neurologic in origin. So the neurologic, there's nothing you can do. I mean, on the person can do. The
tonsils can affect also?
Well, that's obstructive, isn't it? Because the obstruction to the airway starts right in the nose or the back of the mouth.
So that's really important. If you have problems with your nose, if you have a malformation of your nose, if you have huge tonsils in the back of your throat, all this can affect.
Right. And that's the sleep apnea is not unusual in kids. And because it's obstructive, their tonsils and adenoids get big, and they can have obstructive airway disease because of that. But those are simple things to handle.
Now, when we were talking about COPD, we have to remember, as we said, there's other conditions, some of the other conditions that can affect the lung, which unfortunately I have, which is asthma. And we talked about, and I've never smoked in my whole life, and neither do I like to be around cigarette smoking. I was a Girl Scout, I have to admit, and we did have campfires. Now, I'm not going to tell you I had a million campfires, but I was a Girl Scout, and I loved being in Girl Scouts. So one of the things in asthma is usually it's early onset in life. And to differentiate that from COPD, and the symptoms can change day by day. And symptoms are usually worse at night, early in the morning, and can be associated with allergic rhinitis, which is inflammation of the nose, dripping of the nose, post-nasal drip. You know, we hear a lot of people who say, geez, which this season has been really bad, the pollen. They get, you know, scratchy nose, they get their noses stuffed, they get sinus problems, eczema, which is a condition of the skin, a reddening, flaking, which can come and go. So I myself know that I'm very sensitive to many different smells. I'm also sensitive to chemicals. I can't even be in a room where they just put bleach on the floor because that'll set me off coughing. So that's really important.
Oh, yes.
And basically, asthma is a hypersensitivity reaction. Hyper, well, we know hyper means over, an overreacting airway. It didn't need to be react that much, but it does.
Right. And asthmatic people do have air hunger.
So that's really important to look at. Some of the treatments that we use for asthma are also the same treatments that we use for COPD.
Right. Now, just for your audience, if you think that someone in your family or you might have sleep apnea, there's an American Sleep Apnea Association, which you can go online on the web and see if some of the signs and symptoms that they talk about apply to you, and then you can go see your, make an appointment to see your physician.
That's good. You know, that's part of empowering, as we always say, which is not my saying, but I always say it a lot, is knowledge is power. If you understand what's happening with your body, which is the whole reason we're doing this show, is I want everyone to have a better understanding. What is COPD? What is asthma? What is this about your body? So that patients can go to their physicians, their healthcare provider, and say, look, I've read and studied this. What about this?
Well, there's one other thing that I haven't mentioned yet, and I think it's important, and that is if you have sleep apnea or you have restrictive pulmonary disease, there is a study that shows that if you you refrain from having any alcohol prior to the time you go to bed, you'll have less sleep apnea.
Wow, yes, because what happens with the alcohol? It not only does it affect your breathing patterns in your brain, but it affects the muscles in your body so that your muscles kind of weaken up and you could have more obstruction.
Yeah, more, right. Your muscles get, alcohol does relax people, at least in the early phase.
And also the alcohol can also cause reflux. And reflux is another cause. When you have reflux, it can also affect you and go into your lungs. Now, we've talked about there's some people who have so much reflux or who cough up, and because they drank so much, they could have a condition called aspiration pneumonia, which in essence, they're actually swallowing their secretions from their stomach.
Right, or inhaling them.
I mean, inhaling it and cause pneumonia.
Right.
What else did you want to say, Dr. Katz?
Oh, that's all. I mean, I just, it's really important. The alcohol before you go to bed is really important. You should have, if you want to have a drink with dinner, that's one thing. But there are several studies that have shown that the sleep apnea does as much as dramatically reduced in people who have it if they don't have any alcohol to drink. Now,
so that's very important. I want everyone to understand your lungs, you need your lungs. Yes, we all know that. But you got to take care of your lungs.
Like the rest of your body.
Like the rest of your body. So if you are exposed to cigarette smoke or particles in the air or particles from a fire or certain chemicals, you work in a coal mine, you've been exposed to asbestos, all these foreign ingredients can affect your lung function. Well, when your lungs don't work well, you're not getting oxygen efficiently, and that can affect your whole metabolism. So, Dr. Katzen, there is more and more awareness now of sleep apnea. And one of the causes we know, just like we read in the book, Beat the Heart Attack Gene, which Amy Donin is going to be on the show again,
right.
That sleep apnea is associated with heart disease, vascular disease, because it also promotes inflammation. And we know that we're looking for the root cause. What is the root cause? What is causing this inflammation? Is it because people have insulin resistance? They're pre-diabetic? Is it because they smoke cigarettes? Is it because they have a terrible diet? Is it because they don't get enough sleep or rest? Or whenever they sleep, they have sleep apnea and they're not getting a restful sleep?
Right. Or a combination of all the things that you just mentioned.
Are they over-drinking?
And most people, it's just not one thing.
It's not just one thing. Sedentary lifestyle, lack of exercise, the old adage, you rest. We know that's important. And I think that's really important about sleep apnea. If people sleep apart, how are they going to have an intimate life?
Well, I mean, if you have sleep apnea and you're snoring, it's very, very difficult to have an intimate life, isn't it?
That's true. So this is Dr. Elizabeth Triana on the slippery slope of lipids and other medical issues. We want to thank Dr. Katzen. We want to thank Zane. And remember, stay healthy. Don't go down that slippery slope. And if you need a physician who takes good care of you, give me a call at 941-625-1990. Stay healthy. Take care.
WCCF, Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, coming to you from the Grand Air Services Studios. Award-winning air conditioning, refrigeration, and appliance repair in Southwest Florida.